We got a lot going on here today because Billy Gill has returned from the hospital from stomach cramps that we believe to be Marlin-related. He is feeling okay. We will get to his state of being as the Marlins get eliminated by a Braves team that basically overwhelmed them the last part of the season, last few games of the regular season, and then in the postseason. We got a big game with the University of Miami coming up that we want to get into, but we want to start with the possibility that the Heat season ends tonight. Mike Ryan was saying during the break that he expects Jimmy Butler to show up Sunday, even if they lose in uniform to the bubble after everyone's left. Mike Ryan is holding on to a Players Tribune article from Gary Payton, of all people, who was a Miami Heat member for about 7 minutes.
7 minutes and one very big shot, Dan.
An enormous shot that ended up helping win a championship. But Chris surprised me because while we were talking before the show, he slightly rolled his eyes at Jimmy Butler quotes, slightly, just ever so slightly. He's 98% in on the things that Jimmy Butler says, but there's 2% of him that's like, knock it off, Jimmy. This is a little bit of an act. So which were the quotes, Chris, that got you where you were like, you're just saying the thing the athlete's supposed to say. You don't actually believe this, do you?
He's created this like image of like this team guts heart guy that like he has to say like, oh, this game isn't a winner, go home. It's a winner win. It's like, that's a great quote, but I don't believe that you believe that because you know if you lose, you're going home. I guarantee you, you've made some little plan about, hey, we could lose this game. I might see you on Friday instead of Tuesday. Like, come on, let's. I love his ad. I don't want to rip it. Let's start over.
Keep it in there because this is extra motivation for certifiably insane Jimmy Butler,
Jesus,
who will show up in full uniform regardless.
I've got him on Sunday in full uniform on Pirates of the Caribbean. Like just wandering over. Yeah, there's no game. Okay, never mind. I'm just going to come over here. I'm going to beat the holy hell out of one of the Disney mascots. I'm going to do something. Jimmy Butler is saying that the last 3 months are worthless if they don't win the next three games, that he wasted his time.
Which is, I mean, maybe recalibrate your expectations just a little because I think everybody with a pulse that follows basketball says this has been a very good bubble experience for Jimmy Butler, but I believe him when he says this. Jimmy Butler is the type of player that you were always lauding when your parents were telling you what players used to be like and for the love of the game and ultra competitor, and now it's turned into Heat culture. He's that guy. Whether you like certain aspects of his game or don't, he is genuinely a fierce competitor that believes the crazy shit he says.
If they lose, though, his tone will flip like that. And all of a sudden, he'll go into, this was such a great season. Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn. He's going to start building up all these young guys, motivating them for next season. Like, I just see him completely flipping that script and being like, this was such a success.
You would think an Eastern Conference championship and a finals appearance would soften it. But a part of me is worried that we're going to have locker room disruptor Jimmy Butler if he loses in the NBA Finals to LeBron James because he's all of a sudden unhappy because he didn't win the championship.
He's going to destroy everything just like that.
He's going to set fire to the bubble. I believe this guy, and I love it.
But he's been such a good teammate all season in post-game
interviews,
they're winning. Building guys up.
But they're winning.
Yep.
They haven't been eliminated yet. I don't know how he deals with elimination. We're having a pretty good Jimmy Butler conversation, but I haven't seen this storyline at all. And it's kind of surprising. Not only can the Lakers win the trophy tonight and they're dressed up in their Mamba stuff, and basically everyone expects the Miami Heat just to play their part in this larger Kobe narrative. This could also potentially be Udonis Haslem's last game with the Miami Heat. And I haven't seen that anywhere.
Is there? Because he's never going to actually retire. He's going to be an 80-year-old on the sidelines still screaming.
We're circumventing some sort of NBA rules with coaches allowed on the sideline by just having Udonis on the roster.
There should always be a spot on the Heat's bench for Udonis Haslem. I'm serious. Even if he is 80 years old, and just a seat on the bench where UD could sit there and intimidate people.
How does that end, by the way? Because Udonis doesn't seem like he's ever going to be interested in retiring because he can just sit there and collect millions of dollars. And I don't know that the Heat have the guts to tell him you're not going to be part of this team anymore. So it's like a staring contest at this point, right?
I'm picturing him the age of Bob McAdoo, still in uniform.
doing crossword puzzles on the bench.
It ends the way UD wants it to end, Billy, to answer your question. That's how it ends.
I think UD wants it to end lifting a trophy. I just don't think it's going
to
happen.
They love that stuff, Billy. It's pretty rare for people to give a roster spot to somebody that they just want around because the young guys will listen to him and because he's got that original gangster sort of street credibility. I wanted to ask you guys, though, maybe the Heat lose tonight, but Jimmy Butler is the single biggest winner of the bubble. Is he not? Like, bigger than Devin Booker, bigger than TJ Warren, bigger than anybody. He wins. Bigger than Anthony Davis. Like, Jimmy Butler's the one who won the bubble, correct?
I would say Jimmy Butler won, Jamal Murray too. Those would be the two guys.
That's a great nominee.
Yes, that's a good
one. Didn't Donovan Mitchell have a good bubble experience, too?
He did, but, but because Jamal won the face-off between them and eliminated the Clippers, Jamal Murray's an easy number two, and we'll see what happens with the narrative if LeBron James wins, because that's going to be massive, being the centerpiece of a third team that wins a title.
You could actually make the argument that Jamal Murray won the bubble, because there were a whole lot of people who had no idea he was capable of any of that.
I hear you, but there were a whole lot of people hating on Jimmy Butler, saying, oh, you care about winning? What is this move? You're going to be eliminated if you even make the playoffs. So I think, with hindsight and the one of the greatest NBA Finals performances ever, which might be forgotten if their gentlemen swept, Jimmy Butler ahead of Jamal Murray.
I would say the Heat, as a team, are the big winners. Even if they lose in the finals, they're the big winners because they have shown – it's a lot of the talk and conversation has been culture, look what they could do with a guy like Jimmy Butler, and then Jimmy Butler himself has been so good that the Heat have really positioned themselves moving forward. The Lakers were expected to do this.
I guess we should be saying, though, that the Lakers and LeBron, obviously everyone's finishing second place to them. If LeBron wins another title and the Lakers win another championship, everybody in every conversation we're having about anything finishes second place.
TJ Warren was doing well in the bubble until Butler swallowed him like Dan swallowed Billy on opening day.
No one's ever been swallowed like that. Billy, how are you doing? How is everything today? You were out with, we weren't making that up. We told the audience that you were out with stomach cramps because you had said earlier in the week that you weren't sure whether the stomach cramps were related to something being wrong with you or whether it was just stress from the playoffs.
Well, I wasn't in the hospital. So that just to clarify that, because I had a lot of people reaching out to me very concerned. I was not hospitalized. So just.
I even called you.
You went to the doctor. There's a difference.
Yeah. I'm good, Dan. What a season for the Marlins, huh? Let's just be happy. Can we be happy about the Marlins? Can I just be happy to cover my sadness and my tears?
It's up to you. I mean,
I just don't want to. I don't want to get angry with them again because I know what that can cause me. So let me just be happy with the Marlins and the season that they put on and the overachieving that they did. And the future is bright and the process and all of that.
Did the doctor say to you that the stomach cramps were related to Marlins baseball?
Well, told me I needed to lighten up a little bit. I don't know. I don't know that there's a machine that diagnoses the cause as Marlins baseball. So we didn't have that. Like, there's no enzymes in the blood, to my knowledge, that say, hey, this is what it was. So I can't be sure that that's what the cause was.
Are the cramps now gone?
Well, you know. Come and go.
I love the advice from a doctor. Like, just lighten up a little bit. Like, that's like some sort of like, you know, prescription.
It makes it seem like you're partying like Mickey Rourke, right? Honestly, which is not something I have.
By the way, Mickey Rourke was on The Masked Singer this year.
I we saw that.
Music dome.
What a get!
He was the Gremlin Dan.
What a get! I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Is that the biggest star they've had on The Masked Singer?
I mean. Spoiler alert, do you consider Brian Austin Green as big as Mickey Rourke?
No, not whatsoever.
Well, then this season's biggest star probably then. Or Busta Rhymes. Wow, I'm ruining all the music domes I had locked and loaded for this season.
Busta Rhymes, that has to be obvious what he sounds like.
It's so obvious it was Busta Rhymes.
There's no way Mickey Rourke is a good singer. There's just no way.
No, I have him as a good singer, Mike.
No.
Yeah, good singer.
No. He's not a good speaker.
Sneaky good singer.
If you want me to ruin the rest of the music dome, so Mickey Rourke last week was revealed as the Gremlin, and he was not the best singer. And I think I feel like he was singing Stand By Me. I don't remember what he was singing. And he was the last performer of the night, and I'm pretty sure it was a contractual thing, but he basically, as soon as he was done performing, was talking to Nick Cannon and then just removed his own mask. They didn't even vote him out. He's just like, it's too hot in here, and he took off his mask. And you're like, whoa, Mickey Rourke!
That's classic Mickey. I mean,
Is Brian Austin Green the most famous person in his own marriage?
They're not together anymore.
Oh, they're not?
Megan Fox is with Machine Gun Kelly.
What?
Yeah, who changed careers. He was this rapper that was going at Eminem, and now he's like...
He's an architect.
He's like an emo rocker now.
Well, which is it? Those are two very different things. Is he an architect or is he an emo rocker?
He's an emo rocker. I think he pulled the move where he casted Megan Fox in his video just so he can holler at Megan Fox, and now they're together.
It's a good move.
How do you play?
Fine, fine work. From Machine Gun
It would
Kelly.
Also appear that Megan Fox has a type.
Can you guys tell me how it is you felt, okay? Because I felt for you here when I just was watching in general that the Braves are very strong. The top of their lineup is very strong, and the top of their lineup isn't actually what killed you in this series. But yesterday when I'm watching, and Darnot is down 0-2, and he's just been a monster. Like, he's batting cleanup for them and just a beast in this series. And
where did that come from, by the way? I had that guy on my fantasy team. He was not that.
This is everything he was supposed to be when he was a Met.
So Darnot sees an 0-2 pitch from Sanchez up in the zone around his eyes. And while the velocity was down at 95, you're not supposed to be able to hit that. It was way out of the zone. They were getting him to try and chase a fastball high up out of the zone. And he scorched it, squared it up, and hit it off the right center field fence, and it almost was a home run, and two runs scored, and that was the game, because the Marlins weren't going to score, because the Braves have had shutouts in four of the last five games, because the Braves are a good deal better than the Marlins and the Reds, the two teams that they played. But when you guys saw that, when you're throwing Sanchez out there, and he's giving up an 0-2, like, his fastball is at 95 miles an hour because he struggled through the first couple of innings, and his velocity's a little down, but still, 95 around the eyes, you're not supposed to be able to hit that squarely.
Yeah, he couldn't. I mean, that frustrated me. He couldn't locate it all yesterday. Like, you could tell in like the second inning that this wasn't going to go well. He couldn't throw a strike.
It's like his sixth professional start, like major league start. So, I mean, I understand that you put him on there when your season's on the line and he was able to close out against the Cubs. But even in the Cubs series, that game, he wasn't in command. Like, he didn't have control. He came out yesterday with a 5-pitch first inning, which you were hopeful for. But then he loaded the bases in the second inning and somehow was able to get out. I mean, it was his sixth or seventh career start. I don't know why it should be like super surprising that he didn't come in and dominate a team that's just at this point better than the Marlins. And I think even they said it, they're a better team. You know, they made it as far as they went and they had a bit of a disappointing performance, especially offensively, but it was a good season.
Yeah, the season sample, smaller than it normally is, but we have a representative sample between the Braves and Marlins, and the Braves are clearly better. I want to ask the two passionate Marlins fans their opinion. Are you just rooting for, let's get this Tommy John over with when it comes to 6-0 Sanchez? And how do you process what Acuna does on social media? Because he's playing up the villain role in the eyes of Marlins fans.
I mean, congratulations, Ronald Acuna, for making it to the NLCS.
Oh.
You're a clown.
I have bookmarked that Damian Lillard gif. If they lose, I'm going to tweet at him with that gif so bad.
Oh, I'd like to tell the Braves to act like they've been there before, but they haven't. Because before the last series, they hadn't won a playoff series since 2001, which was longer than the Marlins. All right?
Losers.
So don't get me started. Billy, they told you to calm down. Everything's fine.
Who's they? A team of doctors you went to?
You guys would love Acuna so much if he was on your team.
Oh, of course. I would love him so much. But I hate the Braves. And these things, they hit me because they can't get me out. He was like 1-for-47 the rest of the series.
He struck out four times the next game after that. He struck out four times.
Dan.
That's baseball in 2020, though.
But not four strikeouts. You can't get into a war of words with the other team about they can't get me out, so they hit me with the baseball, and then strike out your next four times up.
If 6-0, like 2 years from now, becomes a bust, we will look back and be a Monday morning quarterback about this season. What?
Why are we doing this already?
No, I'm just saying.
People bust
Mike's got him at Tommy John's. Mike's got him having surgery.
You brought up that it's only his. You brought up that it's only his sixth, like, or seventh start, and we have him. And we have him in that position. That's something, like, you're not supposed to bring up young pitching before it's ready. If he turns out to be a bust, we will look back at this and be like, damn, the pandemic made us force him up too early. That's what I'm saying.
What is a bust? Because I don't know a lot of 100-mile-an-hour busts. Like, once you see 100-mile-an-hour in the big leagues, it tends to stay in the big leagues until it has surgery.
Eivaldi is still out there.
Yep.
Being able to throw strikes. Like, if he turns out to what we saw yesterday, just a wild guy that can't throw strikes. I mean, he needs to be able to locate.
Even Andrew Miller was throwing 100 miles per hour. He was a bust as a starter, but he turned into a very good pitcher for a very long time, right?
Enjoy 6-0 for the next, I guess, maybe 5 to 6 starts before the elbow soreness starts. It just happens to every young flame-throwing pitcher.
I understand, but it's a little early for that. It really is.
No, it really is.
It really is too soon. It really is too soon.
I saw him. I'm like, man, is he hurt? This is feeling a little Tommy Johnny.
That 95 was a little slow. 95 for him is a little slow. Darno should not be catching up to fastballs around the eyes.
Chris has turned him into Rick Ankiel now. What's going on here?
All right, give us the positive then, Billy. Give us the sincere positive.
They made it to the NLDS. Yeah. The positive. They swept the National League Central champions. And this whole business, because I didn't hear the show, but I saw recaps where it was like the Marlins benefited from a fluky whatever it was. Listen to me. Nobody in the NL Central made it out of the first round. So they were legitimately one of the four best teams in the National League this season. That's a positive.
One good thing to come from yesterday, Tim Kirchner's not retiring.
We can all get behind that.
Yes.
I would have taken his retirement.
I wasn't being negative about six.
Yes, you were. About everything.
I'm just saying we did bring him up earlier this season.
Listen.
Earlier than we wanted to.
Butler slandering, Sixto slandering. I mean, Jesus, Chris.
I'd rather see 100 miles per hour on the major league roster than waste 100 mile per hour pitches in the minor leagues.
I'm with you. I'm just saying. You brought up the point of that it was only his sixth start. I was like piggybacking off your point.
That's a great point by Billy. If he has 1,100 mile per hour pitches in that arm, he wants them all in the majors.
Do it where it counts.
Can you do it like a preemptive Tommy John surgery? Just get it over with now. Don't get too attached. That'd be funny. People should do preemptive ones.
So like you don't need it, but you do it and you only miss half the time. I'd be down for that.
I'm thinking maybe just have Tommy John surgery on the other arm. Superstitiously.
If I have like a stud 12-year-old, all right, kid, we're going to go ahead and do Tommy John. Get this out
throw
of the way.
Throw a ton of curveballs with him. He's like 12 years old. A bunch of curveballs. Let's go.
Bringing in little Jack, 9 years old, bringing him in for surgery.
He
throws 65 miles an hour.
Dr. Andrews.
It's a new Tom Amansky instructional video. Just Dr. James Andrews cutting open arm tendons.
How hard do you think it is, like, if you just locally live wherever Dr. Andrews is a doctor to get an appointment? Like, oh, I need, like, to go to see the sports medicine doctor. Like, well, your insurance only covers Dr. Andrews. And it's like, all right, well, Dr. Andrews can see you in summer 2023. Hopefully no one gets injured before then, because then you're going to have to wait.
I drove past his office a couple of times because there were a couple of years where I would drive from Miami to Gulf Shores, Alabama. And it was like I was passing Lambeau Field. I'm like, wow, this is one of the great meccas of sports. This is Dr. James Andrews.
What did it look like? I'd like to think that it was like he's like this just down to earth guy that's just like this little tiny office in like a strip
small
mall.
Small town dentist.
Yeah. No, it's basically there. It's next to an
But are there like is it a big deal? Are there like billboards when you're
there are definitely signs. Really? Like you can't miss it.
Well, what are the times when you guys were young that you walked into a place and you actually were moved by the history of it? Because it only happened to me a couple of times in my career. It's been twice that it's happened to me.
I would say Yankee Stadium, the first time I went there as a kid, was a big deal. And then when I came down here, the Orange Bowl was kind of a big deal for me. The first time I went to the Orange Bowl for a big Canes game.
I've only been like moved emotionally once, and it's because of my relationship with Chelsea. I got like this crazy tour of Stamford Bridge.
I thought you were going to say it was Dr. James Andrews' office.
It was Dr. James. I should have went for the joke.
It's only happened once to me.
It's only happened once. It's actually NRG Field where the Texans play. Just goosebumps.
Chris, what about for you?
First time I went to Jackson's Ice Cream Parlor. It was like a historic moment.
Yes. It's so good. It's still there, right? It's been there.
Oh, it's still there.
The 1950s.
They still have the little merry-go-round.
Of course they do. Yeah.
Let me tell you what does not live up to the expectations easily is Madison Square Garden.
Nah.
It does not live up to the expectations because you're like, this is an arena. You have to like walk through basically a train stop. You're like, how do I get to an arena? And you're there and you're like, this is it.
The Mecca.
Thank you, Billy. Do you have a choice here? Is there a place where you've been moved because you've walked into a ballpark that feels either historic or foreign or something from your childhood was triggered?
When I wore the sumo wrestling outfit at the Panthers game to play hockey on ice, I was like, man.
I've made it.
Or did little Billy Gill think he'd be in this sumo suit?
I keep waiting for us to be canceled for that. It's one of my great shames. We should have said no. I'm like, this is cultural appropriation. I feel like we're going to get canceled in 10 years for what we're doing right now. Yeah, I know you owned it.
Roy, what about you? Have you been inside of a ballpark or arena that moved you?
Yeah, walking into Wrigley Field, it was such a beautiful day, and we got seats behind the plate. So, yeah, it's definitely Wrigley Field for me.
Wrigley Field was one for me, and then I walked into the clubhouse and was mortified by the fact that it was a clubhouse from the 1950s. Super cramped, not enough room.
Did it ruin the experience?
No, but it was just different. It was much dingier. It wasn't historic. It was just old underneath the stadium.
Oh, yeah. With those older buildings, like I said, with Stamford Bridge, the visiting locker room is the exact same size of our radio studio. They put Messi in here? Beckham has to just chill here for 3 hours? What?
Roy, haven't you told us you cried when you went into Wrigley?
Yeah, I actually had a couple of tears going into Wrigley. That was
shocking.
I'm calling bullshit.
Shocking.
On that. Yeah.
Shocking. Totally shocking.
Well, you can ask my wife.
No, I feel like there. Roy cried when he went to Wrigley, and when he met his daughter for the first time, he shook her hand.
Who do I believe here? The serial liar for 20 years or the guy who just admitted a vulnerability that he's probably not terribly proud of? That is a totally surprising, like because of the reason Billy said, shook his daughter Claire's hand upon her birth, formally shook her hand, shook his wife's hand, but wept when he walked into Wrigley.
No, I was pretty proud of it. Although walking into the Wrigley Field bathrooms that was an experience because of the trials.
Yeah, you cried for another reason.
That was a different crying right there.
That is, yes, the Wrigley Field bathrooms, the troughs, yes, they're terrible.
Oh, hey, troughs. Hey, troughs. Everyone's looking at my wiener.
You're going to think that I'm saying this just as a joke. If you told me I could go to a baseball game at Pro Player Stadium in 2003 right now, that would give me goosebumps. I don't know. There's something about that because the memories that happened there, like I love the new stadium, but if you told me I could go to a game at Pro Player Stadium the way it used to be, I would pay $1,000 for that ticket.
The way it used to be is empty. What do you mean? It was an empty football stadium.
I loved it. The Anibal Sanchez no hitter. Dan, you were at that one. There was like 7,200
there was nobody
people there.
Nobody there at that one. Guillermo, can you put it on the poll, please? Is everyone looking at your wiener at the bathroom trough in a ballpark?
It's one of those things where no one is, you know, you're not directly looking at someone's wiener, but everyone is trying to get a peek in. You know, out of the corner of their eyes, everyone's looking around.
Well, you can always tell by somebody's demeanor how, what's going on.
He's a peeker. This guy over here is a peeker.
If you walk up and they kind of turn a little bit, you're like, oh, poor guy.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? If they're just like standing there a couple feet away from it, no matter what, it's like, I don't even need to look. I get it.
But everybody seemed so happy because they were beating the Cardinals at the time. So I guess, you know, there were smiles on everybody's faces and whatnot.
It is a tense situation. I don't want to come off as soccer snob again, but when I went for like the Boxing Day fixtures and you're there for like 13 days and you're going to all these soccer stadiums, they're all older. So they all have troughs. And European soccer, you can't at least in England, you can't drink beers in your seat. So everyone chugs pregame. And then at halftime, you're just in this line. So you have to rush because you have a massive line behind you, which I got a shy bladder, especially when everyone is looking at my dick. It's cold out. There's steam coming off your pee. It's just a horrible experience.
Right. Yeah. And like, Mike, have you ever found like when you do this, like some guy is staring at yours clearly and you look back at him and then he thinks he's looking at yours and then it becomes a whole situation.
Especially, I have to, I feel like I have to apply context. I'm a grower, not a shower. It's a horrible experience.
I don't have the experience that you guys are describing about being terribly concerned that others are looking.
Everyone's
Dan. We're not all monsters like you.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest.
Congratulations on your
hog. I mean,
Mr. Confident over here.
No,
like,
no.
Sorry,
no,
wait, sorry. Wait. You're the only one with a huge hammer.
Or he's always in a suite. I mean,
wait a minute. Okay, it's not because I have a huge hammer. I just believe in the decency of people. Right, it's not because I'm sitting here. Look at my hog, people.
Nah, everyone's trying to
do that. Yeah, I mean, you're famous. This is a bigger deal for you than anybody.
I have Dan going to the middle of the trough and just spreading his arms out.
I would be curious if Dan Lebatard,
drink me in.
Say I'm Joe Sports Fan and I'm at a urinal and
I'm looking.
Strolls in Dan Lebatard. I'm gonna look down and see if his dick has a hat too.
Guts is still laughing at his own joke, and now he's gotten out of his chair and is spreading his arms wide to show how it is that I urinated a trough. Drink me in, gentlemen. Here is my enormous hammer hog. Why don't you guys see if it has, what'd you say, a helmet?
No, I've got your penis wearing the same type of hats you do, just as a miniature version.
Tony seems like he'd be confident at trough.
Right in the middle. Right
like
in the middle.
The ones we pull out of the bucket of death.
Like a little Miami Lebo hat.
How do you know? You we were looking at me at the trough.
Please don't send that Photoshop. I'm just telling you right now, audience. Don't.
Angel Resto, get on that.
Don't do that.
Oh my God, that's funny. Tony is absolutely a middle trough guy. Yeah,
he's been looking confident this whole conversation. Just
wouldn't you? I mean, geez, I slink it to the corner. I mean,
also
I was in the middle
at Hard Rock Stadium during Canes games. A good 7 out of 10 times, there's a woman that realizes I'm just going to pee in this urinal and I'm going to skip the ladies' line. Deal with it. So now I've got this to deal with. Like, okay. I'm just trying to handle my number one business, and now there's a woman here leaning over a urinal. How am I supposed to work under these conditions?
Assuming that everyone was trying to look at your wiener, which is not the case, if a woman goes in and starts using the urinal, no one in the room is looking at your wiener while you're going to the bathroom. That seems like the safest scenario to go, because absolutely no one's paying attention to you at that point.
No, I understand that, but I'm distracted, too, by the surreal experience, and I'm like, am I like failing some sort of compliance training by just merely being here?
Tony, do you have a ballpark or a stadium that you've walked into that you got? Because I did. I got, and it was the same reason that Roy cried. Like, it was a beautiful Chicago day. And there was, I don't know, you know, whether you believe in these things or not, but the idea that the history sort of hits you in a way that, can be moving.
I had the same feeling at Fenway Park. I mean, there's something about baseball stadium where you walk up the steps and then you see the entire field, right? There's something about that.
But I didn't have that feeling, even though I grew up a Yankee fan, because there was nothing else in town here locally and my family had some sort of passing link to Bucky Dent. I did not have that feeling the first time I was in Yankee Stadium. It was something, it's probably because I was a kid and didn't have an appreciation for the history.
I mean, notice I'm saying Yankee Stadium. I'm a Mets fan. The first time I walked into Shea Stadium, I felt nothing. Nothing.
It was a dump, right?
It is a dump. I mean, well, now it's Citi Field, but Shea Stadium, you know, that whole area, it's Flushing, Queens. It's just a nasty area.
I mean, but it's kind of amazing.
It all has like a gray film over it.
It does, yes.
How is it possible that you got something that sounds like Shitty Field at Flushing? Like, how is it possible that that's where the Mets play? Like, that's something you write in fiction. Tony, what would be your choice on this front?
Fenway Park was really cool. Yankee Stadium, Gillette was awesome. Mile High Stadium was really cool too. So I've been to a couple things, but though I think Fenway would probably be number one.
The other one that did it for me was Lambeau Field.
Never been.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of pro sports places that you actually feel history because everything has either been renovated beyond recognition or just flatly new. Like Yankee Stadium, they just built a brand new one. It's Lambeau, MSG, Fenway, and Wrigley. College football stadiums, actually, in America, that's where you go to actually feel history and atmosphere now.
I was on a radio show the other day, and they were doing some sort of draft of stadiums you'd bring back that are no longer existing. And they were doing, you know, they gave me the first pick, and I just took the Orange Bowl because of the romance of childhood. But sure, the Orange Bowl was an enormous
horrific
dump.
You needed a tetanus dump shot every time that you went there, but it was perfect.
Yeah, but you felt the history when you, at least I did. Right? I felt the history when I walked into that place.
It's impossible not to when a chunk of it falls on your head.
I felt my life flashing before my eyes.
Yeah.
We all have that one friend in the bathroom that's a stall guy no matter what. Like, that's the guy you always have to, like, put your eyebrows up. Like, what's going on? Like, why do you have to go in the stall?
Cocaine.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Do you distrust the stall guy? Stugazzo, awful lot of conviction. Jeez. About that one. Awful, got in there fast with a lot of confidence.
I have one of those guys in my crew, and so I know. I mean, I've talked to him about it. Yeah.
I always thought small peepee.
I appreciate your concern.
So this is from Gary Payton in the Players Tribune, and it is making the rounds now as Heat fans try to grab on to something here that feels... Wait.
Can I just jump in real fast before we move on? Are you related to Bucky Dent?
No, our family friend. We had a family friend who was related to Bucky Dent. Okay. I'm not related to Bucky Dent.
Just, you threw that in, like my family's connection to Bucky Dent. I was just like, right. Wait, what?
Yeah, I didn't know. I was like, Bucky Dent, right. Cuban. Mm. Right.
Move on, sorry.
And why did it take so long for us to find out about
this? Well, how about this? Well, I've told you before, you don't listen well, or maybe you've been in too many stalls. But I'm pretty sure Bucky Dent is from Hialeah. I'm pretty sure
he is. I remember you revealing this like something along the lines of 13 years ago.
Yes, it was a while ago.
It's quite the callback by you to assume we all remember.
I wasn't assuming that you were remembering. I was explaining why it is I was a Yankee fan growing up. We didn't have any sports down here when I was growing up. It was the Dolphins and nothing else. It wasn't what you have now where you've got the Players Tribune talking to Gary Payton about Heat culture.
So he grew up down here because he was born in Savannah, Georgia. So you're saying he grew up down in Hialeah.
I remember a Hialeah connection. Him and Charlie Huff.
Yeah, hold on. Let me.
Wasn't Charlie Huff from Hialeah?
I don't remember why. Again, and it was a tenuous connection. It was like a guy I played soccer with. My family was close to his family, and they were like second or third cousins of Bucky Dent. But that was enough to have, you know, to be wearing Yankee, hats in my childhood.
Charlie?
There is a Bucky Dent Park in Hialeah I just found on Google. So do with that what you will. A
couple of Charlie Huff facts before you get to this great Players Tribune thing from Gary Payton. He was born in Honolulu, Hawaii, but found his way to Hialeah Senior High. He is also 72 years old right now.
Chris, are you of the belief that Bucky Dent just decided to put a park in Hialeah with no affiliation whatsoever to Hialeah? Park is there, but that he has no history with Hialeah. He just said to himself, you know what? I just want to put a park with my name on it in a real Hispanic armpit of America.
I typed in Bucky Dent Hialeah. That's what came out. I just report the facts, Dan.
All right. Good job by you. He graduated from Hialeah High School. Nice job, Dan. I mean, maybe there is a connection.
Well, I wasn't making it up.
Like we were interrogating.
It really felt like you guys didn't believe my super flimsy connection to Bucky Dent, as if I was waving it around like braggadocio and bonafide. So here is the Gary Payton quote that Heat fans are holding on to. What a strange thing.
It's Bucky Dent.
What a strange thing to put me under a single swinging light bulb of interrogation over.
It's one of the biggest home runs in baseball history, though. I mean, that's why we got all excited and started questioning a little bit.
Well, this pales. Look, you guys are funny, right? Because I would think at this point you guys would have developed somewhat of an immunity to awe, around links to athletes, but I saw how you behaved in the Bahamas around Julio Jones. And I saw that you were a child at Disney World hiding behind his father's leg. I would be the father in this situation, peeking out from behind my buttocks to just get glimpses of Julio Jones at a blackjack table in the Bahamas. I would think at this point that you guys wouldn't have to interrogate me because you'd think I was bragging about a link to a 60-year-old shortstop stop from the 70s.
Old Quintoris, that was a good time.
So here is Gary Payton in the Players Tribune. This is something you guys are eating up, but people are so tired of Heat culture, and many people are making fun of Miami because they're like, how's that Heat culture working out for you now that the other team has the two best players? How many points did Heat culture score at the end of game four when your season felt like it was being decided? But here's the quote from Gary Payton. The headline is what this Heat thing is all about. And it's crawling to the finish line if you have to. It's leaving nothing in the tank. It's being in the best bleeping shape of your life. It's always wanting more out of yourself, out of your teammates. That all sounds a little bit like cliche, doesn't it?
Yes, unless you've been through it and actually have experienced what that culture is all about. And, you know, Gary Payton has. I mean, he's the glove, and he's been through it. He won a championship, so he knows.
And he talks in the story, because these aren't written. These are written by writers who do interviews. He talks about what the practices are and what the pushing is, because that is – look, I remember years ago asking Billy Beane when we were exploring market inefficiencies, and he was the subject of the Moneyball revolution in baseball. And his response to all the intangibles that were surrounding the captain, like what is the intangible that you value the most about the captain, Derek Jeter? And he didn't say leadership or culture or anything like that, because he's not a guy who really believed in the intangibles. He's like, he runs really hard to first base every single time. That's the intangible I believe in when it comes to Derek Jeter. And there is something to simply be said for, if you tell me Heat culture is nothing else other than guys are going to be in the best shape of their life,
yep,
that's something.
It's enough for me. I mean, it should be enough for a lot of, right? It should be enough.
It's okay, something.
I'm going to go there and be in the best shape of my life and probably play the best basketball of my life.
It's all overstated, and I know we can all make the arguments for it in Miami because of how they develop players, and Duncan Robinson and Bam Adebayo are shining examples of what Heat culture is supposed to mean. But if you tell me, what do I want that's an intangible sort of tangible, give me best shape of your life, players, because Antoine Walker was in the best shape of his life when he played here their championship year.
Deion Waiters was in the best shape of his life until he stopped. And now he's probably going to win a ring.
As soon as he signed his contract. Well, he's going to win a ring either way.
Well, that I've seen some reporting done on that. It was up to the Miami Heat if they found themselves in that position. You'll probably get a ring with
But it's the players. No, hold on a second. I think it's the players who get to decide that, and I think they give him a ring just for not snitching on whichever teammate he's alleging gave him the gummy that made him. What is your infatuation with Deion Waiters? You are the staunchest defender of Deion Waiters anywhere in the country.
The guy needs someone in his corner, Dan, and I'm down to be that guy. He's a nice person, you know. We interviewed him, had a good time. He's trying. I wish I could get a follow-up with Deion, but I don't think that's going to happen, to see how the progress is on the roller skating rink that he wanted to buy in his hometown.
Billy, you saying he just needs to be loved, right? He just needs, like everyone.
And appreciated for what he is. He's Deion Waiters. Yeah.
Roy is wondering in the chat, the players decide playoff shares, how much to give the clubhouse people. They make all the decisions on the percentages of how the money gets split up. Is that not something that the players choose who gets a ring, or are there some sort of rules on you have to play a certain number of games? Does anyone know whether or not, if the Miami Heat were to improbably win the next three games, whether they would indeed give a ring to Deion Waiters for being on the team? How about Justice Winslow? He's been on the internet, Stugatz. Wait a minute. He deserves a ring because he would be bringing back Iguodala and Jay Crowder, who contributed to
it. And he made contributions this season, unlike
But what's
Deion
happening
Waiters
with him on the internet, though? Because he is, by the way, happy Howard birthday, Graves. Mike.
Oh, thank you so much. I don't know what's up with Justice Winslow on social media. There was questions as to whether or not he got hacked. He started acting bizarrely in a way on social media before he left Miami, before he was traded, that sort of made everyone sort of perk up and say, what's going on there? And since then, it's only continued, and he won't shy away from taking shots subtly and not so subtly at times at the Miami Heat. I'm really wondering what went on there, because he's not happy with how he broke up. And with this first-class organization, you very rarely see sour grapes from a player that left. They're usually Beno Udrich, who's just like, hey, let's go, Heat Nation. I'll take a payout inexplicably and keep you under the luxury tax. I don't know what's going on with Justice.
Well, he tweeted, among other things, I'm going to make a movie about this bleep. And he tweeted also that that the Heat wouldn't have anything for Bron Bron.
Yeah, and he identifies just certain people that he likes in the organization. Like, he Fs with Bam. I don't know. I don't know if he's doing some sort of... At times, I'm like, is this some sort of social experiment that he's doing on social media? Because he even talks in a way that, if you know anything about Justice Winslow, it doesn't really make any sense on social media.
I hate the guy that's going to make a film about something. Who cares? Honestly, go ahead, make your film, and no one's going to watch it because no one cares about the subject.
Who would watch the Justice Winslow story?
I want to see a movie about the pitch to a movie studio from Justice Winslow.
Well, you know what, though? Maybe you guys can correct me on this, because Jay Williams' popularity, most of it starts with the idea that he was a great college basketball player at Duke. Is it possible that the allegiances to Duke would be strong enough to support a Justice Winslow movie? Is that?
I mean, the allegiances to Duke is why we took him over Devin Booker. Damn it. Pat Riley spent the rest of every other draft taking Kentucky guys since.
You think that's Nick Arison and Mickey Arison's
like
love of Duke?
I'd like to think that it was just Kentucky on one side, Duke on the other, and we're taking the Duke guy. And since then, only Kentucky guys.
You got Mickey, Nick, and Shane Battier. I mean.
That's right. All of them in the ear saying Winslow, the Duke guy, is what you want. Mike, why don't you give yourself the proper happy birthday there that we give around here for birthday celebrations. You are now what? Old man, 35 years old.
Oh, 35 years
old. That hurt you, Stugatz.
Oh, it hurt me bad.
Yeah, I think it probably hurts you guys more than it even hurts me, because you knew me when I was 18. Ooh.
35 years old. Let's give him the Stephen A. Smith celebratory greeting that doesn't have a lot of sincerity in it.
You're going to have to give me a second on the fly. Hang on 1 second.
I wouldn't give to be 35, man. What I wouldn't give to be 45. I'm 46.
Aren't you 47? You're 46?
I just went for the joke.
And happy birthday to him. I don't care.
Wait.
Good luck.
You went for the joke, lying by a year about your age.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's
a good joke. No, it's a good joke.
It's funny. Right. It's funnier than you just want to go back a year.